Welcome to the Humanizing Work Show podcast, where we dig into topics large and small related to our mission, which is to help make work more fit for humans and all of us humans more capable of doing great work. You can learn more about Humanizing Work at humanizingwork.com.
Welcome to the Humanizing Work mailbag, where we answer questions from the Humanizing Work community.
If you have a question you've been noodling on, email us at mailbag@humanizingwork.com and we'll see if we've got a good answer for you. So a recent question we got was, hey, Richard and Peter, what's the best way to pick a pilot team for an Agile adoption?
I love this question because I think most people don't think about it. They just pick a team and they're not really strategic about which team makes sense to start with as a pilot team.
Well, let's talk a little bit about why even pick a pilot team, because I've also heard examples of organizations. In fact, we've had this request saying, hey, can you train all of our teams? Let's go all in on this stuff. And so let's start with the question behind the question that this person who asked the question probably had already answered for themselves, which is why not just go all in? And the reason for that is that you learn by doing. And it's not just a complicated process where you can plan it out, train all the teams, and it's just gonna work. Every time a team adopts a new approach, there's some uncertainty to how that will work and how you need to set that team up to be successful. So we really like the idea of let's pick a team, treat that as an experiment where we'll learn a whole bunch about how Agile works here, and then move on from there, apply those learnings to the next team that we pick, and then the next team and the next team.
So once you've decided to do that, we're going to use a pilot team as an experiment to start figuring out how this Agile stuff works here. There's three different ways to choose, and each of those has some pros and cons. So number one, most people pick the team that is most likely to succeed, which has some advantages, maybe not advantages people think about. One of my favorites is that if this one doesn't work, it won't work anywhere. So you can use this to falsify your hypothesis that it'll work anywhere. Of course, the person doing the pilot usually isn't trying to falsify that hypothesis, but there's some advantage to setting it up to where you could discover really quickly, this isn't going to work anywhere because it didn't work even when we set it up for success. Second benefit, it can create a lot of energy and excitement, can build some credibility for your next experiment. That first team can be a bright spot that you point back to say, look at how much of a difference this can make. Now, the flip side of that is people may not trust this as a representative experiment. You hear things like, of course they succeeded. That team could succeed at anything. And they might be right. It might only work there in ideal conditions. And the thing that made it work there might not be what would make it work elsewhere. So you may not learn things that you could actually translate to other teams. So there's a risk there. You get that early success, potential early falsification, but it can be risky.
Right. And so the flip side of that approach would be, okay, instead of picking the spot where it's most likely to succeed, let's pick a team where, boy, if it works there, it'll work anywhere. So where it's going to be most challenging, maybe a team that is most unlike the description of Agile teams that are cross-functional and have some approaches in place to prioritize well, all those characteristics that we think of when we think of Agile teams. I remember one client,
the old Life cereal commercials. Mikey likes it. Any of the kids will like it.
Yeah. If that team liked it, all right, we'll try it. And we were discussing this approach, you know, trying to pick a pilot team and the different pros and cons with one of our clients. And we were talking with the executive team. And the discussion we were having, it was about training schedules. Like, how are we going to schedule this training out? We have these three different departments that are interested in doing this. And when we were talking about picking the first department, we fully expected them to go with that, just pick the one where it's most likely to succeed, to start to build up some momentum and energy. That team, that executive team, had recently been through our leading organizational transformation workshop. And they pointed out that in that workshop, when we were talking about Kinevin and complexity, that we really should go right for the core complexity if our goal is to actually learn something. And so they said, nah, this department would be easiest, But again, if it could work in this department, all the other departments will fully buy in, because that department has a lot of challenges with prioritizing their work and they've got a bunch of dependencies between their teams. So the second pattern here would be to pick the team where, if it works there, there's pretty good odds that it'll work anywhere in the organization.
And then the third one, so we have the two extremes, like easiest, hardest. The third option is to pick one that is intentionally representative. So it's neither the easiest nor the hardest, but it's typical of where most teams are going to be. So if you imagine a bell curve distribution of teams for how hard it'll be for them to work in an agile way, this is that big middle. The benefit of this one is that it is representative, and so people can look at what happened there and extrapolate to how it'll work elsewhere, and that's positive. You can get some momentum out of that. On the other hand, it can be harder and can take longer to get feedback compared to one where it was the easiest. You're also less likely to get a bright spot out of it. I remember one organization we worked with where they followed this pattern. They tried to pick a representative team, and it started off well, but then the experiment ground to a halt as that team ran into a dependency that wasn't ready on time. So they sort of lost their ability to test and iterate on their agile approach, not based on anything that was directly agile related, just based on kind of a thing that happened. And it may be a typical thing that happens there, but it meant that there was another variable in this test, and it ended up being longer to feedback, less representative, harder to tell the story about what worked there. So I really like representative as the second experiment. I kind of like taking one of the extremes, usually easiest, as the first experiment, then representative as the second.
Yeah, that's nice, because then you can get a little bit of momentum behind, hey, Agile is happening here. And a lot of times we've seen that Agile spreads most effectively when one team gets it right and their peers hear about it, like not through the management change or something like that, but directly from their peers, like, hey, that team is not working overtime anymore, or their quality suddenly got much better. How did that happen? Then it can spread.
That's what you experienced at Adobe, right?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it leads me to think a little bit about another way we could apply these three patterns, because at Adobe, it wasn't like the organization decided to adopt Agile, and so let's pick up front, which will be the best team to start with. At Adobe, I went to a talk by Jeff Sutherland in 2005 and heard about Scrum, and as the program manager for that team, I was keenly had my antenna up saying, what could we do to get better in our next release? So I was just excited about it. And that might be an indicator that we would be on that easiest spectrum, like most likely to succeed, because volunteerism is a good indicator that change is going to be successful. But what we could have done if we had been aware of these patterns is now just to be aware of the pros and cons of each approach. To say, hey, our team is really excited about this. And that means that other people might be skeptical, because of course the audition team could do it. They had full buy-in from all their managers, or they already had cross-functional teams working, or whatever reason people come up with. Or we were doing it on a brand new code base. We used to hear this all the time, like, well, of course it worked for you. You were starting fresh, but it would never work on a 20-year-old code base, right? And so people are always going to be skeptical, and I think in a healthy way, it may have worked there, but it won't work everywhere. So just being aware that you're going to face that if you happen to be on the easiest end, and if you're on the hardest end, there will be some cons. And if you're a representative, there will be some cons, and just be aware of those going into it.
So it's kind of a separate dimension. Like, volunteers could come from any of the three. Probably correlates with easiest, but doesn't necessarily. I can think of volunteers where it was an individual on a particularly difficult team who wanted to do it, but didn't have the conditions in which it would succeed.
So if you're thinking about how to pick a pilot team, hopefully this has been a helpful answer for you.
If you enjoyed this episode and want more content like this, the best thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. We'd also love it if you shared the podcast with friends, family, and coworkers who you think might benefit from learning more about how to make work more fit for humans and humans more capable of doing great work. If you want help humanizing your work, you can find out more about our products and services at humanizingwork.com. We spend so much of our lives working, so let's make that investment meaningful for us and for all the people connected to it.